The mystery heart condition that has killed over 30 people in less than 4 years has claimed another victim. Doctors are baffled as to why seemingly fit and healthy people are suffering massive heart attacks. Many of Fairwater's residents are claiming that the shadow of death has once again descended on the town.
The old express train to hell. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson. This is episode 171. Joining me tonight, Brian. He got him a score of 12. Beat that, Jordan Dunaway, I mean.
Yeah, very good. White Frank, don't kill yourself. Let me do it. I think I have Kevin Bacon and Kiefer Sutherland on the speed dial. Get it? Where they kill themselves? Flatliners? No?
Got it.
Screw you.
I got it. That was pretty good. Pretty good. And a nice throwback for this show. Nice job. Mm-hmm. Also with us, Randy, his body is a roadmap of pain, Jordan.
The following greeting brought to you by Single Malt Scotch. Mm. Aloha, Scott. Brian, will you hate me if I look back at this week's film and just say that Michael J. Fox's performance was a bit shaky?
Mm. Oh, I might.
Right out of the
game. Wow, did not see that coming. What'd you
How
say?
Many people just hung up on us, I wonder?
I don't know. We'll find out later on this episode.
Send your hate mail to.
Also with us, rounding it out, Brian Jive Turkey Afro Man Ibbot.
I like Chive McBride. Yeah. You know, there's nothing like mourning the loss of your husband by hooking up with a paranormal psychic that helps solve his murder just a couple days later.
Nice. Very nice.
Did not waste any time.
No.
The body and the ghost were not even cold.
No. So we're talking about Frighteners, everyone. The Frighteners, I'm sorry.
Frighteners.
Directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Walsh and Peter Jackson, starring Michael J. Fox, Trina Alvarado. Don't know her at all.
She's basically Andy McDowell's cuter, better actress sister.
Yeah, that's about right.
Right.
With less work, though, overall. She didn't do as many cool things. And Peter Dobson and many more. Peter Jackson's last film before getting greenlit to do The Lords of the Rings. Hmm. This came out in 1998 or 9. Have I got that?
96.
96.
96, I'm sorry.
So neither of those things.
Neither of those two things. Only the new thing you said. 1996. It does feel so much of it held up for me effects-wise and stuff that it didn't feel
right.
That old.
Mm-hmm. And this was Peter Jackson's production special effects house that really, this was cutting edge at the time. It was, mm-hmm. It was huge.
Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah. It was him and Weta Studios, which is now, right? You know, one of the great standards of the industries. Is it Wet, Brian? Right. From is a little callback from last week? Is that what you got there?
Is it Wet?
Is it Weta?
Fantastic. Let's let Scott Fletcher explain a little more about what this movie entails.
The Frighteners. Blending humor with horror, director Peter Jackson's outlandish tale centers on shady psychic detective Frank Bannister, played by Michael J. Fox, who uses his ability to communicate with the dead to boost his business. But when a sinister spirit is unleashed and members of the community are mysteriously killed, the PI, with the help of a comely widow, played by Trini Alvarado, the PI must use his powers to get to the bottom of the supernatural slayings.
Spoiler committed by Busey offspring.
By Teeth.
Yes.
Teeth Busey.
By Teeth Jr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jake Busey, we've not seen since Starship Troopers on right. This program. Yeah, so I hadn't seen this at all. I don't know why.
You haven't seen this.
I know.
This is like, this was huge for me and my crowd back in the day.
Well, okay, 96. Where were you, Brian? How old were you? What was going on?
I was at a school, of course, at a high school. I was, I guess, right in the middle of, no, this was after college, too. So, yeah, just
Just hanging, doing your thing.
I was hanging, doing my thing, trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And this movie came along, and it was, you know, I'm a big horror comedy fan. Yeah. You know, Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time. And this was definitely akin to that. And so
Agreed. This
was something that I knew right out of the gate that I wanted to go see when I saw the trailer. And I saw it, and I thought it was brilliant.
I had a kid at this point. She was just maybe 2 years old, not even that. We were maybe thinking about another one the next year, something like that. It's like, this is and you know, the kids I'm talking about now are 16 and 19, so that'll tell you how long ago this was. I probably was busy with all that and just hadn't had a chance or whatever. Randy, do you remember, had you seen this before? Is this first time viewing?
Never seen this movie before. Like I said last week,
great.
I thought this was a movie based on a Stephen King collection, and it just didn't interest me. Even when The Lord of the Rings became like my favorite three films of all time, I never thought, I don't know, I just, because Peter Jackson had made some crap, and I did go see his King Kong, and that didn't cause me to go, oh wow,
let me go see what else I gotta
dig into his catalog.
But you did, you've seen like Dead Alive or some of his weird horror stuff, right? Like his crazy old horror movies.
I have glanced at his crap, but not like dug in. And
oh, look at that.
I never spent any time analyzing his crap.
Dig in there too deeply. I know that this movie, there's so much to say about it, and what I think about it I'll say in a bit, but I want to keep people hanging whether they think I like this or not. But I feel like this was his in-between moment. There were portions of this that were nicely filmed, nicely paced, decent acting, you know, like you could make other movies. You could tell there was other stuff on your, you know, he was capable of other things, but also just enough of his old weird New Zealand psycho crap he used to make that it was like this crazy crossover time. I still, though, wonder who at Miramax or whoever made the big choice. Somebody someplace said, all right, one of the biggest names and IPs in the history of filmmaking, the Lord of the Rings books, we are going to make those into films, and we need to absolutely get it here. Who are we going to do this with? And what did they get to sort of know any of this? A lot of really weird movies, Frighteners included, where I don't know how they came to this conclusion. There is a fascinating story to be told about that, and no one's told it, or at least I haven't heard it.
I'd be curious to see if it was other things that made them decide to give them Lord of the Rings. Because this was my first time seeing the Frighteners also. But I had seen either the movie right before this that he did or a couple before this called Heavenly Creatures, which
was
Kate Winslet. I think it was based on a true story, so it wasn't like something he wrote. But I'd be curious if they looked at Heavenly Creatures, or was it Beautiful?
Heavenly Creatures.
Or some of his other things instead of this.
I think that, and probably a combination of, well, who are we going to go with? It's like, well, we're going to look. We need somebody who's got a really good special effects production house, and they probably looked around at that and said, hey, look at Peter Jackson with Weta. He does some pretty dang good fantasy stuff. You know, I think it's probably more part of his Weta than it was maybe him directly.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. Because they were like, hey, we have to have an attack on giant castles, and there needs to look like there's trillions of orcs out in the forest that are you know doing all these things. We have to have this tech. Maybe he went by with a demo reel and said, oi, look at this. And they all freaked out and thought it was awesome.
I got some
try not this energizer battery off my shoulder.
Exactly. So who knows? But I think that's there's an interesting story there that none of us have probably heard. Yeah. But back to the movie. So here's the big reveal for me. I really, really liked this movie. A lot, way more than I had any expectation for. I don't know what I was thinking going in necessarily. I knew it was farcical horror slash, you know, there's some Tim Burton in here, and hell, Danny Elfman does the soundtrack, so it's hard to avoid comparisons, I think, just tonally to some of Tim Burton's work. But this is like Tim Burton on steroids. This is the kind of stuff I wish Tim Burton did more of. It's great. I don't know if it's even an homage in that direction or if this is just something so totally different, but these ghosts are freaky in their own way that is not freaky in kind of a scary way, but freaky in a kind of kinetic, like
kind of a haunted mansion kind of way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very
like a really mansion. Like a, I felt like a kid.
With Eddie Murphy.
Like a,
right.
A,
I would. Yeah. I would say this is this. If you wouldn't have told me it was a Peter Jackson movie and you said it was a Steven Spielberg movie, I would have had no problem believing you.
Yeah.
Because it felt very Steven Spielberg. I don't know about the Tim Burton, because I think that Tim Burton has, you know, there's a look. There's all these stripes, black and white stripes all over the place, and twisty little pointy things in the backgrounds and things like that. I think, you look at Beetlejuice is kind of the closest that Tim Burton would have ever come to something like this.
I just feel like the characters are kind of scissor hands extras, you know, like
I could totally see that. I think the Danny Elfman part of it is what really kind of relates the most to
probably
the music.
Cause it's definitely that style and that feeling
fanatic.
You know.
Right. Yeah.
Randy, what's your take? Like it?
I hate this movie.
No, it's all right. It's not to be seen for the first time after you've watched seasons and seasons of Desperate Housewives.
Right. Interesting. Interesting.
Seriously, and you've heard the Danny Elfman playbook ad nauseum. Mm. I will say I really, really enjoyed the cinematography of this film. And I didn't expect that. I thought it was going to be kind of cheaply shot. And it wasn't. It was really, really beautiful. They shot in New Zealand. They really, you know, framed up things really beautifully. The story is ridiculous, and it drags you along, even if it's against your will. This story is determined to make you believe it, and ultimately it did. Not that great a movie.
There's a vibe to it that just – I don't think I was supposed to like this. Like if somebody who's going to levy this argument this week, I'm sure in the comments or somewhere else, how can you not like Small Soldiers but really like this? And they have a point in that it's kind of comes from the same – it's not the genre, but this thing that Dunaway's always talking about, this Ghostbusters / I don't know. What's another good example?
Ghostbusters,
Frighteners. They're all kind of in the same
–
Gremlins, yes. That kind of just over-the-top, supernatural comedy mixed with some kind of horror elements, all that kind of stuff. It comes from that same tree. Mm-hmm. But man,
There's no blood or gore in this movie. May I mention that?
Gets his head blown off by a shotgun.
it's immediately replaced with a ghost head.
Yes. So,
it splatter.
Okay, that's maybe the one time there's really any gore in this movie. Yeah. You wouldn't think so. You would think, because a lot of times horror movies really, especially now, you know, gore and horror, I mean, it's just hand in hand.
It is comedy gore kind of stuff, or comedy, right? Yeah, it's the, you see the ghost get shot at and splattered and spewing.
They're basically, most of the ghosts, they die by deflation. Like a big balloon. And so
that's a good point.
It's interesting.
It's weirdly a mix of, this is kind of creepy and terrifying, this part right here, and this is silly and crazy and over the top. But what really won the whole thing over for me was, and the big surprise for me, was Michael J. Fox playing against type for him.
Yeah.
He's usually kind of the, you know, he's basically Marty McFly and everything. Scout.
Yeah.
Right, which is kind of the same, always the same character. And this one, he's kind of a bastard. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of a turd. Shyster. Yeah, he's a total shyster. He played it really well. I totally bought it. I made me miss him in mainstream films. Mm-hmm. And he looked like Jesse Pinkman was another nice surprise. His hair and everything, he looked like Jesse Pinkman to me from Breaking Bad.
I remember him having the occasional big eye scene where he does the big eye thing over, you know, in Back to the Future, whenever Biff stands up in front of him, and you know, that's all good to remember. But he does the big eyes a couple of times in this movie, and I missed that.
Sorry, side note. Biff was in that the Heat movie.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, it was a nice surprise to see Biff in there.
Was he waxing somebody's car?
No, he is. He should have been. He was. Police chief. He was great.
We're also referring to this movie's Biff as Biff, right? Because he's Biff.
He's basically sort of
yeah,
Biff.
Jake Busey is kind of Biff.
Yeah. No.
Oh.
No, this movie has a Biff.
Who's the Biff?
Oh, the ex-husband, the guy who dies.
Ray is his name?
Ray Linsky, yeah.
Ray's our Biff.
Right. By the way, excellent acting for Peter Dobson in this movie, if you ask me. I think he's just spot on the entire time.
He's good at that thing he's doing, but he does it in everything I've ever seen him do, and he drives me crazy in all of it. That guy drives me crazy. I'm not saying he may not be just for me, and that may be the only problem. So he's really good at playing that just jerk dick man.
Jerk Dickman.
But he was fine at playing that. I just never liked that character so much that I can't get rid of him quick enough.
You know what's funny though is I've gotten older and I've become a bit of a suburbanite myself, and having that, you know, that fence and that little yard in the back and everything, I was kind of finding myself relating to him, going, yeah, running into my fence, get back here and fix this, trying to shyster me out of some fake ghost hunting, get out of here for I have to kick your butt. And I felt bad about that. I was like, why am I relating more with this guy?
Yeah. Some trivia that I thought was hilarious that I can't remember if it was IMDb or Wikipedia pointed out, but Michael J. Fox runs over a white picket fence in The Frighteners. He also runs over a white picket fence in the first Back to the Future movie and Doc Hollywood.
Yep. I was about to say Doc Hollywood, definitely, because I remember that.
Well, yeah. He's got that in his contract.
Yes.
Part of the deal.
You know, it's like the I got to run over a...
the green room needs to have romaine lettuce.
Yeah.
Is this the scene where I get to run over a white picket fence?
Because it's in my rider.
I think it's his fight against the man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stick it to the man. That's exactly right. Yeah. By the way, Weta Studios, or at the time Weta Digital Limited, Peter Jackson's special effects company, had to expand their capacity from one computer to 35 computers in order to meet the visual effects demands.
Welcome to 1996.
Yeah, dude. It probably was a big deal at the time, but
it was.
That stuff looked great though. Like the
it did.
Some
yeah,
of it, the, I mean, some of it is a little off and kind of PlayStation 1 era looking, but
the Grim Reaper stuff was really cool. Yeah. The lumps, you know, right along the walls, running along the wall, the shape of the dude.
Yeah, I thought
that was. Yeah, I don't think I realized how much of a sale that was back in the day. When I saw the first trailer for that, I was like, it just blew my mind.
Yeah, straight up, I thought this movie was 10 to 15 years old. I didn't know it was 25 years old.
Wow.
Well, wait, right.
25, hold on now. That's not right. That would be,
it's
96.
I'm sorry. I thought it was 10 years old. I didn't think it was 15 years old.
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
It. All right.
How far ahead they were.
True story.
Right, they really were. They're way far ahead, and especially for this small studio in the middle of New Zealand with 1 to 35 computers. Like, it just seems like such a small. I think that's just a testament to the creative people he had working on crap like this. Because it felt like every time I'd see an effect shot, like Lee Ermey getting cut in half or something. Spoiler. I would go, "Ooh, now I'll bet that's not just hey, we just spent $5 billion on a new, rendering whatever." That is like Bill over in Cubicle 8 figure out a way to make that look good. Like, that's what that felt like to me. It's like effects at a pivotal point when computer tech was coming online and we could actually do this stuff. This is a year after Toy Story 1. So this is still, this is when Pixar was working on limited hardware. But so it's early in that era, but I felt like this was like bootstrap ingenuity. Employees just blowing people's minds, and Peter Jackson just going, "Oh, that's great! Print it." I don't know what accent that is.
Wow!
Really?
What was that? I don't know what that was. I apologize for whatever that was.
Whatever nationality just got offended, please A, don't be offended. C, B, please write in and let us know. What nationality that was?
Yeah, just don't be offended by it. Oh my gosh!
The special effects were the only thing I didn't care for much was when Michael J. Fox was getting run over constantly and getting flattened out. That felt like I was watching The Mask.
There were some, that was like kind of cheesy special effects, but there were no real rules, were there, to what you could do as a ghost, what hurt, what didn't hurt. you could have an effect on some things, but other things would just pass right through you, go right through the floor.
They kind of blew that in two places because at one point Jake Busey swings to slap the lady and it goes right through her and she doesn't even know he's there. And then later he's literally holding her down on the floor as a ghost and she can't move.
Right, right.
And here's the bottom line. For the whole movie, the whole episode of this podcast, ghosts are inconsistent when it comes to physics. So when a ghost is first made right after the person's died and they don't know how to control themselves, guess what? They fall through the floor. And guess what? 99% of ghosts that have ever been created are currently all at the center of the earth trying to figure out how to get away from it.
I like that idea.
I like this concept.
I like that idea a lot. Yeah, so I don't like ghost movies, especially ones like this where The only two examples that I've ever enjoyed is Ghostbusters 1. 2 can take a flying leap and bite itself.
Not
it sucks.
Good.
And not this. Good. Like, this now joins the one other ghost movie I like. I don't like movies about ghosts. I like horror movies, but none of them involve ghosts.
What about that one Ghost?
I didn't like Ghost. I was not a fan of Ghost. I thought Ghost was annoying. No.
But at least somebody's there to explain the rules about being a ghost.
That's the thing. I'm glad they didn't have any rules. I'm glad they didn't explain all that crap because I didn't feel like I needed to go through that because you know what? I wanted to watch the crazy FBI acting where he's been in Jeffrey Combs?
Dahmer.
Yeah. Jeffrey Combs. Yeah.
He was. Oh man, his character.
Hitler haircut.
This guy, I know we haven't gotten to it yet, but we will. But it just bears mentioning that Jeffrey Combs, the Reanimator, by the way, which is really where he got his big fame.
Have we watched that yet?
No, we need to. Mm-hmm. Nine different characters on Star Trek various series. Right. Nine of them. And you know them all. You'll see these pictures of them and go, oh my gosh, yeah, there's Jeffrey Combs. Jeffrey Combs. He's been a Ferengi. He's been head of the Jem'Hadar, whatever they were called on DS9 with the weird ears.
He was just everything in Deep Space.
All the time. He was a friend. Yeah, he was I mentioned Frankie. He was the Andorians in Enterprise. Maybe the best character in Enterprise was that guy.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, he's awesome. In fact, if they'd have gone to season 5, according to everything I've read, he was to be a regular crew member, like full on. Right. Cast, yeah.
Man, if you want to see something impressive, just go to Jeffrey Combs' IMDb page and you just like scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Like, oh my gosh,
he's the voice
of Ratchet.
Yeah, in the Transformers Prime, he's really good as Ratchet. Like, it's damn fine voice act. The guy's awesome. He's prolific. I love him.
I have never heard of this really old one he did called Frightmare from 1983.
Sounds like garbage.
I am interested.
Sounds like it's something we should watch.
This looks good.
Oh, Halloween's coming up, man.
3.7. Drama students decide to pay tribute to their favorite horror style star by stealing their body from the crypt for a farewell party.
Oh. Sounds like a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. I think we should watch that. I got a trope for you. Here's one. It was the innocent girl, after all, who killed everybody.
Well, her and Jake Busey.
Well, yeah, she had the ghost of Jake Busey. And she could see, right? That was her deal. She was also psychic and could see his ghost. And
She could see his ghost for sure. I'm not sure about the other. They really didn't say because he manifested himself in physical form a couple of times to attack her. They never really say.
Yeah, but how?
But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you who's OP'd right now.
Who?
Frank. Mm-hmm. Because he can just, he become a ghost and he ripped her soul right out of her, man. I'm like, whoo.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah, he's Frank Bannister is OP. Is that what you're telling
right,
me?
Man.
Yeah, okay. Very much.
Ripped her right, right out.
Didn't you feel like for a portion of the movie they forgot that Michael J. Fox was the guy in the movie? Just for a little
they
bit?
They kind of did, yeah. He was a little irrelevant for a while.
Yeah, which is a little bit weird. But I thought he was great and this would have been So this is pre, it may not have been pre his diagnosis, because I think Doc Hollywood was around the time he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, but this is the last major sort of filmy thing that certainly is a starring role that we would see for, I think, forever.
This is before or after Doc Hollywood?
Before, this, I want to say this is after, but is that wrong?
This is after Doc Hollywood, and then he was doing Spin City, and that's about the time he found out about, remember, he got replaced.
Considerably after Doc Hollywood, like 5 years. Right. I thought these things were just like consecutive.
Yeah. Just back to back, right out of Family Ties, straight into Back to the Future. Boom, 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 boom.
Bright lights, big city.
I mean, he's been on a bunch of stuff. He's got a brand new show that's filming right now to be launched on some network this year, the Michael J. Fox
he's
show.
Got, Right. He's got drama going on with Taylor Swift. I mean, he's doing everything.
What?
Does he with Taylor Swift? Oh, that's right, because his kid, like,
the Taylor Swift thing that he said he didn't want his son near Taylor Swift, right, due to the comment Tina Fey made about Taylor Swift, stay away from Michael J. Fox's son. And
yes, that's right.
Oh, he doesn't even know who Taylor Swift is. He's like, who is this again? Who is this? I don't even know.
He was on a bunch of almost 2.5 years worth of The Good Wife at the series. He's been on Curb Your Enthusiasm, like lots of TV stuff lately.
Right.
I was on Boston Legal in 06. Like, yeah, he's had plenty going on. But you're right. This 96 to 2001 Spin City series, it was at the end of that you kind of stopped seeing him and things, which is sad, because right, I feel like he's an American treasure. He's one of those great things, one of those actors that did that thing, that jump from TV, right, which wasn't all that heard of, kind of the Will Smith way of doing things, you know? Like, kind of crappy TV, but then you're better than that, so you rose out of it and did better things. You're kind of the Patrick Stewart of Star Trek, in a way.
You're the Patrick Stewart of Star Trek.
Which is, you know, right, I like watching him. And he looked like Jesse Pinkman. I've mentioned that before, but I think he did. What else? Do you think movies like this could be made now? Do we care about
Forrest? I would love to see a movie like this made. I mean, I'm always jonesing for that next horror satire. It's kind of a comedy that takes itself somewhat serious.
But who's who's doing them now? Nobody's doing them now.
No, not really, because they're going complete satire, and I don't like that as much. I've never been a big fan of the complete satire, like the scary movies and all that stuff. I mean, but they definitely don't have any staying power. You know, it's just kind of like these little one-off skit jokes.
Do you feel like that trend of every kind of film gets parodied to death is finally right behind us?
It seems like because when was the last one that came out?
Movie 43 kind of.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah,
January.
That was like Kentucky Fried Movie, though, more than like right, a.
Yeah, it was almost like right, a parody of the act of making pot parodies or something.
Right, exactly. Right. And it was, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's interesting the amount of great actors they got in it. But it's abrasive. How about that?
I'll tell you what tried to do it. That Johnny Depp Darkness vampire deal that was out last year.
Dark Shadows.
The Lone Ranger?
Dark Shadows. Lone Ranger sucked. Oh my gosh, I hated it.
Dark Shadows also sucked.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
I've heard bad things about it, but I want to see it. I've heard bad things.
So I guess what I'm saying is, it's, you know, still occasionally Tim Burton will swoop in and do something sort of ish like that. But, it's not the same. Like, no more are we getting movies like, I think we're going to start seeing a bunch of remakes. Like, I could see Frighteners getting remade. I could see, maybe it's too soon for that. But
with Chris Pine?
Yeah, with Chris Pine. Chris Pine's in every remake.
It's a very clever premise.
Like 96. Yeah. It's time.
Yeah. What did you say, Brian?
It's a very clever premise, though. The con man who sells his, who's in league with the spooks to try and selling a fake Ghostbuster business. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, I mean, have we seen something like this that's got more of a real world, less supernatural?
It rang familiar, didn't it?
Yeah. What was the Tom Hanks thing where they dig stuff out in the basement, or they're trying to get
the money pit.
Not the money pit.
No. More recently, he plays Colonel Sanders, basically. What was the name of that one?
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, yeah. What was this? That was this shyster movie. What was that thing?
And I can't remember.
I forgot about that. He does play the Colonel Sanders character, and
I can name this movie.
It's the other one.
The Lady Killers.
That's it.
The Lady Killers. Isn't that a similar thing where he's selling a fake service so that he can really get in there? I guess it's less about bilking somebody out of money, more about being able to get to a bank.
Right.
This is actually one of the reasons I didn't love the film. Because it started out as this one thing, and then it went so far away from it. And
pretty
and I'm suddenly having this Flatliners movie crossed with the Haunting, and I'm like, man, I kind of miss the crazy, wacky story of a guy working with ghosts, one of whom is Chi McBride, by the way.
Yeah. Oh my God. He's great.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. I don't know who the other guy is, but
And one of the reasons why I'm getting that vibe, Randy, is because this was basically supposed to be, it was written originally or conceived originally as a short, like a Tales from the Crypt, kind of just little, you know, 30-minute thing. Mm-hmm. And he was asked to extend that. So I personally think it works. I think it's all held together by these great characters, but you definitely have to suspend your,
sure. There was a kind of a reckless filmmaker kid in all of us abandon happening. And that's, I think, what I glommed onto as I was, I didn't feel like I was being force fed ideas or thoughts. I felt like somebody had a camera and was just going, wouldn't it be cool if, and then they just started doing cool things. And I like that. I dig that. What's that movie? Okay. So I thought of another one that's like this, and it's, the one with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, Nothing But Trouble.
That one.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Oh, my gosh.
It's real bad, but that's what they were trying to do. Is it Nothing But Trouble?
It is
right.
Real. It is. It is Nothing But Trouble. And, you know, that movie is horrible, but, you know, I still enjoy it. It's a guilty pleasure. I love.
I can't watch it. I tried.
I don't usually sit down and just stare at it, but, you know, if I'll just put it on the TV and just kind of, you know, watch Dan Aykroyd pop up and be Dan Aykroyd and just.
With that nose, the penis nose he had, and all that. Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's bad, dude. It's a terrible movie. Don't watch it. Don't watch it. It does have Daniel Baldwin in it. So the other Baldwin.
True story. True. True.
Anyway.
And, you know, it represents a period in our history, too. It's just like, it's very nostalgia when I watch that, though. I mean, it's very
because you were raised, I mean, there are other people who look at it and just think it's silly, but you were kind of raised on these kind of movies and they resonated with you.
Right.
I don't think we get them back. I think we're done with this. This is a genre that we will not be taking seriously anymore. It's either straight up horror or it's full on farce. There's no this thing in between like this doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Man, can I just get like a special superpower or, you know, just any type of superpower for an accident instead of stitches?
Yeah, because do that.
Yeah, because I'm tired of all these people getting these really cool powers, talking with the dead because they had a wreck, you know, or radioactive spider bites them. They suddenly can swing. No.
Who's the dude in who's the dude in this who was the original Gomez on Adam's Family?
Oh yeah, Astin, John Astin.
John Astin. I
almost
really
completely unrecognizable too as the, you know, the old miner looking dude.
Right.
I mean, there was something familiar going on, but you weren't sure. You kind of weren't sure what
the dude had so many prosthetics on that it was almost more like a voice thing than being able to recognize him physically.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of his eyes maybe and his voice, but that guy was great. I think that was my favorite character in the whole movie.
Yeah,
like underused.
Those three ghosts. I mean, John Astin and Chi McBride and the dude with the glasses, I thought could have been, it would be even more fun to like bring them out a little bit more and, use him a little bit more.
Still with us, by the way. 1930, he was born. He's still around. Still kicking.
You'd really be dangerous to have them on screen much longer than you did, I think, because I think it's very close to falling into the pit of Nothing But Trouble.
You think so?
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I think you'd be right on the verge there. I do have a trope.
Oh, wait.
Are we too early for the tropes?
No, trope away, dude. Yeah.
You got to kick the dog to protect it. You know, punch the Bigfoot so it returns to the woods. Yeah. Say mean things to the girl so she will be safe.
Right,
that's what you want.
That made me sad that he had to do that, but he was really good at it.
Yeah, he was
like,
all right. He was all right. Mm-hmm. Lee Ermey, if you needed a job for a dude who,
oh my,
R. Lee Ermey, yeah.
If you need a guy who just, you know, you need an army man.
You know,
is there anyone else to hire? I don't think there is.
No,
I think
anybody who plays that role is really just doing an impersonation of R. Lee Ermey.
True story. He is such but it almost kind of annoys me. It's kind of, I don't know.
It doesn't annoy me at all.
Is he kind of too good at it or what? I mean,
he doesn't annoy me at all.
He's really, I mean, he is the de facto. You can't do that role without being him.
Yeah. But this is a thing that I liked and didn't like at the same time because this is like saying we borrowed a character from a whole other film. The whole character, right? Mm-hmm. Like at the beginning of Full Metal Jacket, he gets shot in the head. Sorry, spoilers. He gets shot and dies, and now he's haunting this graveyard in New Zealand.
Right? For the record, in the chest, and I only know that because that movie scarred me forever. Freaking
absolutely.
Full Metal Jacket, right in the gut.
I meant to say the chest. He keeps his brain in his chest.
Yeah, yeah. The other dude dies in the head.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way he could transform into like multi-gun Ermy,
right,
and
right, like, yeah, awesome. Like he's now, got he was these, accessories. Army right. Man comes with double blaster gun and this outfit.
And I think there was a whole story there they really didn't get to address. And I think I was like, okay, is he just there and he's taken on that role because that's what he's always done? Or is he actually put there to maintain order and to make sure that ghosts stay in the graveyards? And does that happen everywhere? Are you kind of like having an assignment?
Is there an army man at every right. cemetery keeping the ghosts in line?
That's right, awesome. Right. I love that idea.
It was an interesting story.
I like this. This is what I like about his IMDb page. If you read through it, just these are the names of characters he plays in movies. In Kung Fu Panda, Legend of Awesomeness, he played General Sin. General, okay? So, yeah, all right, General. Here in An Okay Place to Eat, a short film in 2010, Sergeant Cereal. All right. Huh. Toy Story 3, he was Sarge, of course, in all the Toy Story movies. Mm-hmm. Let us not bring up Toy Story 3 again, because we don't want to get Brian in trouble.
Please don't.
Colonel John House on House MD. I don't remember that. That's weird. Let's see. Sergeant on X-Men Last Stand. He was a voice.
He was a voice.
Drill Sergeant / Sergeant on The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is
yeah.
his job. This is what he yeah. does. But I don't remember him being in Seven. That was what I was trying to get at here.
No,
what?
But take a look at his photo, his IMDb photo. Well, looks like he's singing La Paloma Blanca on the Lawrence Welk show, doesn't it?
That is fun.
Now, how old is that shot? That says 89. Okay. All right.
No, that shot's
when
not
he was
from
in
89.
Seven,
that's what it says. Photo Universal Pictures 89. Oh, it does.
Okay.
Could be wrong. Huh. Who knows?
Was he one of the dead sins in
the dead
Seven?
The dead what?
Right. In Seven, one of the not right. the seven deadly sins.
He was the guy right. slumped over a bowl of cereal or whatever in the gluttony scene or whatever. Sure.
He actually leads me to a trope that bugged me in this movie.
Oh, crap. Hold on. I thought I got it.
Right. Told it.
I call this trope, you gotta be dead to get anything done around here. Like, true. These movies have, and this is not the only one, these movies have this thing where, like, basically the world of the dead is where it's at. The world of the living, you don't really, I don't know. Like, I guess we're trying to save something for the world of the living, but really, like, ultimately, Michael J. Fox, you know this whole movie, Michael J. Fox will kill himself.
All right.
In order to get anything really accomplished.
Right. You can't do, because right. you can't get unlimited bullets out of big ghost absolutely. Guns unless you die.
Oh my gosh, that mm-hmm. shotgun. I was just knew that Randy would have said something about that already.
That was great.
No, I'm all right with it.
The shotgun lady. Well, I mean, unlimited ammo.
Yeah.
She was using that thing.
Well, it's the ghost world, dude. That's two rules of the ghost world.
She was in the corporeal world, and she finally runs out of ammo with a single-shot weapon, by the way.
Right.
Like, she should have – she goes, click, and I'm like, well, yeah, it clicked. You didn't load it. You've been loading it, right? Like, anyway.
Yeah. Gun tech in movies, still a threat, still a problem. You know? They don't do it right. They never do. Someone's got a P9 with the ability to hold a clip with 9 bullets, and they've fired off 20. So what are you going
right.
to do?
This is one of those nobody is safe movies too, and by that I mean you just even if you're a ghost, you can get killed.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that
again,
happens.
It seems like there's no definition on what can kill you as a ghost. I guess just the Grim Reaper is the thing that.
Right, right.
Yeah, but even him, like when he's back to Busey form, what kills him? Like he was a blob on a gravestone at one point, and then later he was like half in and half out of that Grim Reaper thing, and you know
it finally took the
giant colon of death to tear him apart or whatever that was at the end.
Right, yes. It looked like I was expecting John Voight to come barreling through there
and wink on his way out.
Right.
Hey.
They partially explained it a little bit quickly in the middle of the movie when Michael J. Fox runs into the suburbanite and after he dies and he's talking about plasma and how energy works and that kind of stuff and he just gets cut off.
Yeah.
And I think that was intentional. So, but you have only so much plasma that can last you so long and you only have so much.
Well, that's the problem, though, is that you either start to explain these technical underpinnings or you avoid them. My favorite way to avoid them is when Deep Space Nine did their Let's Go Back to the Tribble episode in TOS on Star Trek, and Worf wore a thing wrapped around his head. And all these Klingons in that episode had no bumpy heads. And at some point, I want to say Dax or somebody said to Worf, "What's the deal with their with the forehead thing?" And he says, "He says
we don't speak of it.
We don't speak of this or whatever," which is so much better than speaking of it.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Like, don't give me metachlorians. I don't need to know how Luke has these powers. I just need to know that he's got them, and that's it.
Right.
So a movie is smart when they don't try to explain those things. It's still fun to pick it apart. You know, I like to just do that anyway, but.
Right.
I prefer not to know.
Just Randy, was your major problem with the movie, was it the necrophilia? I mean, is that really
that was out of place?
Yes.
This was this fun romp through the afterlife, and there's a character who's trying to get it on with the corpse, and it like, oh my God, what's it doing there? Why is this here?
Dry humping Tutankhamun in a.
Right. I don't understand why this guy's here or why he's doing that, because it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know when his butt was coming in and out of that tomb. I was.
No, you just made it less funny.
And then he comes out and says, "I like it when they just lay there."
Yeah, that wasn't good.
Stop. Why aren't you doing this to me?
Making it worse. Yeah. I forgot about that. I'm glad you guys brought that back into my head. That's great. Appreciate it.
But speaking of that scene, that those cops, man. Yeah. The cops that were just shooting up
everything in the museum. Yeah.
My There's gosh.
What? Oh, the cops shooting up stuff in the thing?
An unarmed man has not committed a crime. And you suspect that he might be the guy who's going to commit a crime. You don't know. Right. He decides to run, which is to say, not commit the crime, in a freaking museum filled with bystanders. You just start squeezing off rounds.
Open fire, yeah.
It is like they were trying to serve drinks.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, just shots everywhere. And the actors did a piss-poor job of looking like they were aiming and firing true. Their shots were all – like, go back and watch that scene. Their shots were all over the place.
Yeah.
Their arms are waving around like, I'm trying to kill bystanders with my gun here.
But they were accurately popping the heads off of like small raptor skeletons and like they're waving it around, but yet somehow they were perfectly killing all the museum's priceless artifacts one by one and just never Michael J. Fox, which is a lot.
Never.
Yeah, that's never. That kind of stuff. I don't know. The way I look at it, it's like, what was it like with the movie we just saw? Or like Toy Story. Or Tiny Soldiers. Or Small, what is it? Small Soldiers.
You just can't help but bring up Toy Story.
That thing. That Small Soldiers piece of business. That was, you know, again, it felt like a world where in its reality and in its rules, cops don't exist. Nobody enforces the law. Nobody does anything when something bad happens. And that's kind of how this feels a little bit. And I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it. This thing had enough energy behind it where I just didn't care. It was like the very first scene of the film is ghosts moving somebody's bed up and down and completely haunting a house. And I went, wow, we are jumping right in here. I don't even know what to expect.
My favorite scene from that, the haunting, was had to be when they were beating up the Raggedy Ann doll.
Oh, right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm visual humor man. I love it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm not big on the slapstick stuff, but that was kind of funny. But what's funny is the... 2 days ago, like the day before I watched this, Poltergeist was on Showtime and came in just as the opening stuff, just as like chairs are sliding around the kitchen. So it's, you know, basically the beginning of the movie when weird stuff starts happening. And I've forgotten how much of a sense of humor that film, it was almost like seeing that reminded me of the sense of humor that you can inject into a comedy film like this.
Yeah,
and I think that one was Coach as well.
Yeah, it did have Coach.
It did have Coach. Yeah,
that movie is notable in my life for the scene where the maggots come out of the steak, and then he looks in the mirror and starts peeling his face off.
Yes,
still to this day is some of the most shocking cinema I've ever seen.
You need to see that scene again because
is it cheeseball now?
So cheeseball now. That is that scene and the scene with the kid in the bedroom with the jester doll. Were the things that just freaked me out in the theater when I first saw that. And seeing it again this time was like, wow, this is, I guess so much has come since then that has desensitized me. And of course, I'm older now. Duh.
Right, right.
But seeing it now, it's like, how could I have ever thought that that was scary?
Yeah. What about the old lady, the weird midgety lady upstairs screaming?
Walk towards the light, Carol Ann.
Yeah, Carol Ann!
Yeah, she holds up. She still holds up.
She's okay.
Yeah, she totally holds up. Totally, absolutely. What about, did you see Poltergeist 2 recently? Because that isn't that the one where tall man is outside the window?
Oh, I forgot there was a Poltergeist 2.
Yeah, there was, and it wasn't very good.
Exactly.
It was
example of a bad sequel.
Yeah.
Here's that lady. Hold on, let's see if this is.
Yeah. Welcome to the Waxworks.
Knows what scares you. It has from the very beginning. Don't give it any help. It knows too much already.
Oh, I kind of want to watch Poltergeist now.
Yeah.
Am I going to be disappointed, Brian? Am I going to be like,
yes.
No, you know what? There's some of that you're actually going to chuckle about. And yeah, so many Star Wars references, too.
Yeah.
And yet, no, the first movie is fine.
Yeah.
It's no Exorcist, but it's fine.
It's light. It's light. God. Scary, right? Like, you wouldn't call it real scary. It's more like, you know.
Yes. Yeah. It's
horror light.
It's on the level of this, honestly. But when you said you were going to play a clip of her, I swear to God, I thought you were going to play "Welcome to the Waxwork."
What is real scary? Like, this movie, The Frighteners, should get you thinking about horror.
Sorry, I didn't want to mess you up.
Very well. Very well done, my friend.
Sorry. Continue.
You know what I'm saying?
What defines scary now for us?
You watch The Frighteners and you're like, yeah, these ghosts are pushing a bed up and down. You can actually see the bed lifter in one little shot.
Yeah.
Really, really briefly. So like these ghosts are making papers fly around. They're opening the microwave oven door like
spinning plates.
Chasing people with children.
Yeah. So yeah, you'd walk out of your house. Like, okay, now I'm like but movies have come along in the last 20 years. That were downright frightening, and I'm just curious, like what out of movies defines
fright
for you? I won't
see Paranormal Activity because I hear that
really?
It is. Yeah, I hear
same,
that it's
same.
Yep. It's
really I've seen it. I'm not. It's not scary.
There's two kinds of scary for me. There's only two kinds of scary. There's one where it's like truly
on a plane,
truly like psychopath. I don't mean like slasher movie, but like real serial killer Zodiac style. Mm-hmm. Killer stuff. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Like Seven isn't even that to me. Seven is kind of trying to play with that, but Seven is still kind of out there. What he's doing, he's almost supernatural in a way. Those are not a problem. But when it's like about a real serial killer with real depraved sort of broken human emotion and all that kind of stuff, that freaks me out. And then the whole paranormal camera hidden someplace, see a little black shape moving around at night. Don't know what the hell that is. Blair Witch Project made me wet myself, I swear.
Really? Yeah,
it really did at the time.
I remember it really freaking me out. But Paranormal Activity is just like Blair Witch Project in the fact that there's a lot of promise of something scary happening, and it all takes place like in the last 2 seconds of the movie.
Oh, really? So is it one of those where it's just the absence of ghosts and the absence of things that you're looking for much that that's what scares you?
That is what scares me.
Really?
Yep. So they did their job. There's a reason those movies are huge. It's because they do their job. They actually accomplish the freak out they're aiming for. Show me something like Saw and I just laugh. Like, Saw, that's stupid. Mm-hmm. Or any slasher movie where it's Jason or whatever. Those are who cares? Those are fun and I laugh at them. I laugh in their faces. But but something.
I'd like to see one for film stock. One of the more recent horror movies. Like, you know, the what was The Exorcist of – or The Exorcism of – Sally
Rose.
Jones or whatever. Oh, Emily Rose.
That's it.
I also don't like movies where their mouths get really big. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm saying?
Where they their eyes look at the camera, but they're going.
And they go, and it just doesn't stop. Right. Their mouth just gets giant. I don't like that. That really weirds me out. And I also don't like unnatural movement, like quick twitching and things like that.
Right. Tim Robbins thing in the 80s? Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah,
that one
that scared the hell out of me. Yeah. That's the stuff that gets
anymore.
Me.
We should go back and watch
but
that.
Again, that's about a real – I mean, it's not, but it's about it's the way they handle the serial killer thing. Another really scary one is the guy that plays Merle on
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. I can't even his name all of a sudden. Anyway.
Okay, so for me –
Michael Rooker. That guy. Rooker's in a movie called something Killer Man something. I forget the name of it.
Dude,
but it's
awesome.
So scary, that movie. So scary.
Killer Man
something. I'm just looking through Redbox for
– the cat people.
Oh, my God. The
something.
Hold on. I'm going to find it because it's going to piss me off. Michael
– somebody wants to know if it's Paranormal Activity based on a book. I hope not.
God, that would be a boring book.
Here we go. Michael Rooker, and he is known for, come on, IMDb, could you be slower right this second? Right this second, could you be slower? When I'm, here it is, Portrait of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh, really early on, 86.
Yeah, old, and it scared the jeebus out of me. Streaming, actually, so you guys can see it.
Oh, look at that. Wow, you look at the movie poster, and look how young Michael Rooker is.
Yep, a very young Michael Rooker, looking scary as hell.
So no, it's not scary, this movie.
So, right, but I want to answer my own question here.
Yes, please do.
Because I think I can define what truly frightens me in movies, especially movies the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's a child or childlike. It's got huge eyes. Sometimes they're missing.
Right.
It's got...
cat eyes, usually.
It's got really bad hair.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing the... What's the one? The girl in the well?
You're seeing The Ring or The Grudge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really black
and,
hair.
Oh, The Grudge.
And it plays a mage and it knows Blink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes,
am
totally.
I wrong about this?
No, you're totally right. Yeah, The Grudge and The Ring... The characters in those, yeah, definitely freaky, freaky stuff.
And they're spastic, and just the way they move. Ugh, I don't like that.
We should watch something like the new remake of the. Oh wait, no, The Evil Dead isn't out yet. House at the End of the Street, maybe, or
yeah, I've seen that. That was really good.
What do we got? Not Slither.
Ooh, Slither.
Oh, I hear and Rooker's in Slither. I think.
Oh, really?
I think so. Am I have that wrong?
I'm just looking at the horror listings for Netflix. The current stuff.
You don't mean that in a sarcastic way. You're literally looking at the category. I'm looking at these horror listings in Netflix.
Right.
They're the worst.
Man, there aren't a lot of newer things in here. Oh, Apartment 143, maybe?
I heard okay stuff about
that.
It's
funny. There's a thing called The Pact that looks just like The Frighteners.
Oh, I love it.
Seriously.
It's called
The Pact? Yes, The Pact. Casper Van Dien.
Oh, no, then. The answer is no.
It's basically got wallpaper with a guy's face coming through it. Like the,
it's even got The Pact in the front of it. So
I mean, the original Evil Dead kind of freaked me out. I remember that freaking me out. VHS is supposed to be kind of freaky. There's a lot in here. We should do that. Coming up, Halloween, whatever, we gotta do something.
Maybe we do one as a commentary so that you can hear Scott and me freaking out over things.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
We actually have already planned our October films for this year for FilmSec.
Oh, we have?
Yeah. I just thought you might want to know.
All right.
I forget what they are.
Me too.
So we don't have to follow them.
Yeah, well, I'll get back to that. But The Frighteners has something interesting, which I actually like. And I realize we've already talked about the physics of being a ghost. Mm. But I really like the idea that as a ghost, you can't really interact with another person. You just pass right through them. But if you get on the other side of a piece of wallpaper, you can interact.
Right.
You can punch someone in the mouth if you just get on the other side of a piece of wallpaper.
I'm done with that.
There's a movie in here called Hell. That's it.
Yeah.
Just straight up hell. I think
I've had wallpaper attack me like that.
That might be fun. You know what else really scared me? Quarantine. The movie Quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
That got me. Dexter's sister. Yeah, Dexter's skinny, weird sister. Totally got me that movie. She's such a bone. I found Randy's movie that he confused with The Frighteners. I think you were always thinking of The Langoliers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds about right.
I think the reason why you're getting it confused is because anytime you take a word like fright or Langolier or any of that kind of stuff and you change it down.
It's a word. Come on, Scott Johnson.
But the way
anytime
he said that,
you take that word,
this sounded
taking
funny.
Words, and that's what Stephen King does. It's like The Thinner. Mm. Ooh, let's watch Thinner. It's like,
by the way, I like the movie Thinner. If that ever comes on streaming, I'd like to watch it with you guys.
That'd be fine. I'm cool. I'm a fan.
Most Stephen King films are on right now. Even
you know
Silver
what
Bullet.
You know what I like about it so much. This like old gypsy Indian. I don't remember. This old like aboriginal person drags all four fingers across your face and goes, thinner.
Ugh.
And curses you all in the one move. It's so gross.
Ugh, that sounds bad. I don't want thinner. That was one of his, wasn't that one of his short stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like those. Some of those are his best work.
That was a good run. He had a good run of short stories.
Yeah, his Richard Bachman business is all good, man. I like all those stories. All right. Mm-hmm. Speaking of The Green Mile and Shawshank. All right. Let's get to some damn clips. I got a bunch here, and they begin with this pissy old lady.
to your room this instant.
There you go. Just a short one. Just get right to it. Alex Keaton is in the case, on the case.
That toilet seat lid banged up and down.
No.
Did the bed levitate?
Yeah. Yeah, with me on it.
Whoa.
Spontaneous recurrent psychokinesis.
Sounded dirty. I hate that trunk. I don't remember what this is.
Man, oh, yeah, I hate that trunk.
Oh.
He was in the Volvo. He was in the back of Michael J. Fox's Volvo. Oh,
that's right. He was pretty.
By the way, somebody has a Volvo fetish in this movie. So Michael J. Fox always had one.
I think that's all they have. That's like the only car in New Zealand. Yeah, isn't it?
Right.
It's like Volkswagens in Mexico. Right.
Yeah, that's it.
Was New Zealand actually mentioned?
I don't think so. No.
In the movie, no, they did not want us to know that it was.
No, but yeah, exactly. It was
because I realize he lost his wife and he's a great architect and everything, but. Man, what a view.
Yeah.
Sell that property, my friend. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If that's what everything there looks like, I would like to move there.
Just sign me up.
What's this one? Oh.
Why is it that flies stick to you guys like shit to a blanket?
Ha ha, very funny. You a funny guy, Frank.
Gene McBride is awesome, but let's take a step back here. Frank, what do you know exactly about shit and blankets? Yeah. That was weird.
That is a weird comparison, yeah.
Shit to a blanket.
You ever had that on your blanket? Not a good time.
That doesn't sound good at all. All right, this is old man, what's his name from Adam's Family?
When a man's jawbone drops off, it's time to reassess the situation.
That's a great line, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, think about that. Think of the wisdom there. When a man's jawbone drops off.
Right.
It's time to reassess the situation.
Now let's go hump some mummies.
Yep. Oh, that's right. That was him doing that.
Yeah.
Oh. Mummies I'd like to play around with.
I blocked that out a little bit, I think. I do, because I
the
was
mummy
like,
humping?
Yeah, I didn't need to see this guy, this character actor who's been in so many great things. I just didn't need all the visual of that. Like that was a weird choice. Also made no sense physiologically speaking.
Right.
Let's see. Lee Ermey.
What in the hell is going on out here? Get back in your grave.
Yeah, pretty much that's what he...
Get back in your grave.
Does he still have that show on History?
I didn't
know
they stacked ectoplasm that high.
Didn't he? Didn't he have a... He had a show for a while.
He did. Mm-hmm. And Mail Call or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Mail Call. And, that was it.
Yes.
It was good.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I liked it. It talked
read
about
letters. Yeah.
It was military stuff. Like somebody would send a letter and he'd read it all like that, his style, and say, you know, it'd be a letter like, how does the army feed, you know, 200 men or whatever? And then he would actually go and kind of document how mess halls worked in the field and would interview people. It was cool. You actually learn crap. Mm-hmm. And it went away.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. All right, this is just a clip reminding me how much I love Jeffrey Combs.
You think you're quite unique, don't you, Mr. Bannister? But in my business, I deal with your type every other week.
That guy was great.
Can't he stop thinking about awesome. the Ferengi named Brunt.
Yep, that's it.
On Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
Whole episode.
Or that, I'm telling you, that Dominion guy with the weird ear vents. He was slimy, Weyoun. Creepy bastard.
His name was Weyoun.
Weyoun. Yeah, that's that guy's great. More Jeffrey Combs, please. Let's see. There's another great line from him.
Piss on your hush puppies.
There you go.
No. I love hush puppies. Yes. You will not piss on my.
No. He was talking about the shoes. He was talking about the hush puppy shoes.
Yeah,
he was asking about the guy. He was asking about the guy in the bathroom.
Not the southern favorite. We're talking about those shoes.
Yeah. By the way, those are really, really southern. I've met tons of people the last few years who have never been to. The deep south of the United States, never eaten soul food, have no idea what hush puppies are.
Oh, they're so
really?
Good. Yeah, Kim makes them occasionally. Yeah. They're so freaking good.
Makes this cornmeal and...
You just make cornbread and fry it.
Ibbot, you ever had a hush puppy?
I love hush puppies. Are you kidding me?
Look at the four hush of us.
Up.
Look at us.
Yeah,
we
that's
are
my
all
favorite thing at
fans.
Red Lobster, man.
Yeah.
That and the Cheddar Bay biscuits. I could eat 43 of those.
Let me ask Brian Ibbot.
Classing up the Red Lobster.
But I know Brian, my teammate Brian Dunaway knows some soul food. Brian Ibbot, what do you think of fried okra?
I like fried okra too.
I like fried okra, but I prefer fried
so
pickles.
Slimy. So slimy.
I like fried pickles better.
That's the black-eyed pea staple. I don't even know if we have black-eyed peas out here anymore.
Yeah.
But that was always the side I'd pick. Fried okra and mashed potatoes with the cream gravy.
Yeah.
And of course, in the course, you get the chicken fried steak, because if you go to Black Eyed Pea and you get anything but the chicken fried steak, they laugh at you.
Yeah,
in the kitchen.
They don't like you there.
No.
Black-eyed peas in general,
yeah.
I can't – well, I live in Southern California. I can't get good black-eyed peas.
No.
And I miss them, and I want them.
I'll send you some, Randy.
Yeah, get him a box up there. We actually raised
one
year.
I'll run down to the Piggly Wiggly. I'll be right back.
We actually raised a batch of our own okra one year because Kim wanted to make her own out here.
You raised them?
Well,
what did you
grew some.
You hatched them.
You hatched them.
Egg,
care for
and
them.
And then you put them in a cage.
Yeah. You feed them. You breastfeed them, and then you.
Are those free Roman okra?
I always remember the day that I sent them off to their first day at school.
I raised corn. You could say that, right? That's a way to say it. Oh, yeah, it is.
I always forget that Kim Johnson is from Louisiana, the weirdest state.
Yeah, Mississippi,
Oh, Mississippi.
May as well be.
I really always forget.
Yeah, you always forget that she doesn't live in. No, but she lived like 30 minutes from just New Orleans. It may as well have been Louisiana. It doesn't matter.
Okra is just important.
Yeah, it's great.
It's
great. It's got a weird, if you're not used to, there's a weird texture to it, and if you don't, if you're not into that, you don't like okra. But if you can get past that bit, it's amazing, great stuff. Bread that stuff up, man. Oh, cayenne on there. Mm. All right, what else are we doing? Oh, somebody, some bad crying in the movie.
Go with me to mother's room.
Oh, that is so bad, dude.
Poor Michael J. Fox.
Terrible. That girl was a bad crier. I like this one because this dude gets scared and it cracked me up.
Son of a bitch!
He fell out of the car or whatever.
He was sitting at me. The fact that he had such a hang up about women yelling at him, it was just I could watch that.
He was great, man. All night. Jeffrey Combs, more things, please. Just
great. I really liked it that the movie ended with him.
Mm-hmm. Right,
like,
right.
It felt like as they went along, maybe the script wasn't headed there, but they found this great character, an actor to play it, and decided we're just going to keep going back to him because it's so good.
Yeah, he was awesome. I wish he was in it more. Here's
My body is a roadmap of pain.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's quotable.
Guy's great. Nobody's business. He's kind of that. He's that one. He's that trope of we need two villains in our movie.
Right, right.
One is, this corporeal whatever, and then the other one's this real dude who's been chasing this stuff forever, and it's a common thing. But done pretty well here. I liked it.
Say, hey, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of like a Dee Wallace fan? You kind of like the Patricia Ann Bradley? You kind of into that? You kind of E.T.'s mom?
E.T.'s mom somehow looked younger in this movie.
That's who that is.
Previously.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. Bro, Scott didn't recognize that.
No, I didn't, but now I do. Because the whole time I thought, oh, that face. There's something with the face. I'm moving on. Or something else going on now. But I would forget.
I sure recognized it.
Oh, my heck. Yeah. She should be getting mad at what's his name for saying calling his brother penis face.
Hot.
Or penis breath, was it? Isn't it penis breath in E.T. that got her all riled up?
I'm going to be honest. As a first-time viewer, I was a little confused about the story around everybody else.
It doesn't help that Gary Busey Jake Busey.
Right?
Sorry.
It doesn't help that Gary Busey's not in this film.
Right, it doesn't help at all that he's not. But it doesn't help that Jake Busey is trying to beat up Dee Wallace at the very beginning of the film. And then you're surprised when you find out that they're in it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just misdirection this movie.
Right. And like you start out the movie and you're like, oh, this is important. I'm going to try to retain what in the world this person is and the older lady that she's crying to and why, and then it all gets blown out for an hour and you come back to it and you're like, I don't really care. I just want to see, Michael J. Fox Ghostbuster. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Con man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Con man. Yeah. That would have been, he's basically Peter Venkman in this movie.
He is. Totally Peter. I thought about that. I was like, you know what? This would have been perfect if they just had labeled it Ghostbusters 3 and just got it on with it. And just said, okay, this is going to be a small town.
We're not
rendition.
Bringing anybody back.
Right.
Of course, Hudson, Peter
Hudson could be in this. He'd do it.
Peter Venkman is one of the
Wow. He could be dead. I love that idea.
Hudson would be in it. He would, because he didn't care. He would have been in it. Oh, right. My gosh, that's funny. Sorry, Randy.
Peter Venkman is one of the perpetrators of a trope I really, really like.
Oh, hold on. Trope-like.
Musgrove.
Okay, go.
And I mean, we've been talking about it the whole film. We've been talking about it the whole film, but it's called the Monster Protection Racket, right? Where you pull a con to, you know, to pull the wool over some people's eyes, and they give you money, and you have basically control of some monster, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean,
right.
That's in the Ghostbusters canon. Like especially like the cartoon, Venkman's the guy who's happy to, you know, raise a ghost in order to get somebody to pay him money. My favorite rendition of the Monster Protection Racket is Dragonheart, and we need to watch that.
Yes,
oh, we do. Didn't we try once and it got pulled from streaming and we pushed it off?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's the your Dennis Quaid. Michael.
McConaughey dragon or
no, that's Fire in the Sky.
Why can't that movie go streaming?
Would love to watch Fire in the Sky again. I love that Batman and freaking all right,
and a whole scene of them describing Star Wars. It's fantastic.
It's really good. It's really good.
Dennis Quaid does the voice of the dragon in Dragonheart, right?
No, he's the man in Dragonheart. Oh, it's Sean Connery plays the dragon.
Sean Connery, that's right.
I think Ibbit may be less familiar with Dragonheart than we thought.
A little bit less familiar, apparently. I knew that somebody did the voice of a dragon. It wasn't just dragon.
It should have been, though. No, I would love to watch that movie for FilmSack. And by the way, while we're talking about movies we should watch on FilmSack, here are the Matthew McConaughey films that are currently streaming.
Oh, wait, for just a sec, before you give that, can I just say this? How awesome would it be if there was dialogue between Dennis Quaid and a dragon voiced by Matthew McConaughey, and it would go like this? He would say, you know, you have any villagers? And he'd say, no. And he'd say, it'd be a lot cooler if you did. I would watch this movie that Brian Ibbett has constructed for us. All right, sorry. What's streaming from our friend Matthew McConaughey?
We may need to ask our listeners, are any of these films worth sacking? Because in the past, our Matthew McConaughey film for FilmSack was amazing. Okay, so Glory Days, The Lincoln Lawyer, Failure to Launch, Bernie. Oh,
please watch that again.
Yeah, no.
Sahara. And The Paperboy.
Hold on. Was Failure to Launch, was that the one with naked football legend Terry Bradshaw? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't want to see that ever again.
Yes. And
what about
and
Kill a Mockingbird? Wasn't that?
No. You're thinking of.
Don't say 48 Owl.
No. You're thinking of that. He's a Southern lawyer. It's not To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's Time to Kill a Mockingbird.
Time to Kill a Mockingbird.
Right. I always get those two confused. Got Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, come on.
It's a good movie. That's a great. I think that's a fine adaptation of that book.
I can almost guarantee it probably doesn't hold up, and I would love to see it.
Really? I think it's good.
I think it holds up.
I think Pelican. I saw Pelican Brief recently, and that one also holds up. It's not bad.
I'm sorry, but what I just heard makes me say we should watch Failure to Launch.
No,
really?
It's got Bradley Cooper,
isn't it?
It's got Kathy Bates.
It's got naked Terry Bradshaw. I can't
do
that
again. It's got Rob Corddry and Patton Oswalt.
I can't do it. I don't think I can do it.
I kind of want to, like, Scott, sometimes you got to drag Scott kicking and screaming into watching a movie.
Yeah. There are times. You're not wrong about that.
It would be the first rom-com we've ever done.
Right.
That movie's like a Failure to Entertain is the nut title of it.
It's an absolute Matthew McConaughey vehicle. I mean, it's the epitome of all the things that he was doing along the way.
It's also a Sarah Jessica Parker vehicle. There's a question about whether or not she's a.
That's a horse-drawn carriage, by the way. Sarah Jessica Parker vehicle. Right. Get it? Got it? Get it?
Yes.
Vehicle? See, vehicle is the vehicle part in the horse-drawn carriage. All right.
Which reminds me, I've been meaning to ask Scott, and I would text him, but we're currently recording a show together.
Yeah.
Have you watched the Ken Burns Dust Bowl film?
Yes, I just finished it. That is insane.
Have you not listened to any other episodes of GMS this week?
Exactly.
Yes,
what I'm thinking.
I did just finish it, and it's so good. Go with it. Go with it.
It's so good.
Okay, gotcha.
That movie will tear your historical butt a new hole. Yeah, you ever seen The West Wing?
Oh my gosh. Scott, does, just so you know, if you're listening to your very first Frog Pants podcast right this moment,
yeah.
Scott lets the world know what he's watching and playing at all times.
Yeah.
That's and it's really, really pleasant.
Yeah, of course it is. So of course it is. It's always pleasant.
There,
pleasant's
there
the right
clips?
Word. Yeah, there was one. There's this
I'm one. Making a car move with the power of my mind.
All right, there's a clip. Can't tell me that's not a clip. How about this one right here? Oh, this is Lee Ermey saying something, but I couldn't tell you what he said to save my life. So you guys decipher it. Here you go.
Goddamn crowd, you unorganized, grabastic gob of teleplasmic shit.
I got some words. Some words, right. Yeah. Not all.
Lots of cursing and something about plasma, teleplasmic, something that you probably heard incorrectly at the meeting.
Yeah.
That's what Peter Jackson said. You know, well, let's just keep that. That's fine.
Close enough.
Exactly.
What if he carried any of these characters, not characters, but these actors over to Lord of the Rings? Who would Ermey play?
Ermey, jeez, please, yes.
Right. You shall not or pass, you maggot.
You bunch of imps. Get down.
I didn't know they stacked gnomes that high. Only two things come out of
New Zealand.
Dude, Jeffrey Combs could have been a pretty good worm tongue. I'm telling you, there's possibilities there.
You know what, though? Jeffrey Combs in this movie seems to be channeling Jim Carrey.
Little bit.
Yeah. And
from there, I started launching off on this movie is absolutely full of people who are reminding me more of other people than themselves. Like the lady we were talking about that reminded
Andy
me
McDowell.
Of Andy McDowell. There was one that reminded me of Catherine O'Hara. Obviously, what's his name reminded me of Biff, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, what if this entire movie is
Bizarro World?
Yeah, it's the second castings. Like every, you know, they had a cast and then everybody walked off the set.
Weird.
And this is all the replacements.
Yep.
I think this movie actually benefits from something that I feel like Ghostbusters benefited from. I think if you go and watch behind the scenes stuff about this movie, you will see them having a fantastic freaking time. They're like having so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
people terrible. Say that about Peter Jackson, though. He creates an atmosphere where they never want to leave, and they're all best friends forever. And everybody on the Lord of the Rings sets have always said this, that it's just the man is impossible to not enjoy while you're working with him. And that's kind of awesome. Like it's cool to
it is cool to
think that you can be in a relatively remote place, have a special effects company come out of nothing to be one of the most important working. To get the kind of films that you got, to stay that humble, to lose all that weight, to then get
lose
to
that weight.
Then get to do The Hobbit. Like you're living your dream anyway, and he just seems like the nicest guy every time you hear him interviewed or talked about.
I'd really like to give a ton of credit to his wife, Fran Walsh.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think she works with him.
If you watch the documentaries that are packaged with the extended versions of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You can't watch those and not come to the conclusion that Fran Walsh is the driving force behind all this stuff.
Yeah.
Those are 6 hours long, are they?
They're really, really long. But I'm just saying, yes, they're really, really long. But I'm just saying, like, you can't help but conclude she's a freaking genius.
Yeah. Now, what little I know and have seen, she seems like the woman behind the man for sure, and maybe the more powerful of the two.
Yeah,
she probably made him lose all that weight because she's like,
"Give me that donut."
She's the
Give
smart one. So
yeah,
he got crazy skinny there for
he did
for a while there. All right, we got one last clip here, and it goes something like this:
"This record should be held by an American."
I don't remember thinking
God.
It's an odd thing to have Gary Busey say or Jake Busey say.
I got 12.
Yeah.
All right, there you have it, clips. Let's get straight into let's get straight into me not having anything ready. Here we go. Okay, it's awards time. Time for us to offer some awards up for the performances and things in this film. This film wins 3, and they are these. I wish there was a sequel award. I'm totally giving that award. I would like that.
The frighteners.
The more frightening of the ers. I miss Michael J. Fox movies award. There's that one.
Yeah.
I really do. He's awesome. I can't wait to see what his new show's like.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take that. That's good. Also, TV's the new movies anyway, so who cares? The world needs more bad Jake Busey performances award. Ran away with that one. Easy.
Do we agree that Jake Busey is actually better than Gary Busey?
Oh, by far. Yeah,
he's a better
actor. He's a more talented actor. I think I'd much rather watch a film with Gary Busey.
Yep, I'm with you.
Okay, but wouldn't you love to see Jake Busey on, like, The Apprentice?
Let me think about that.
Let me think about that. I'll get back to you.
I actually don't hate that idea. There's something in that. If you're going to give me a movie, though, and say, hey, guess who's in it, Jake or his dad, I'd say, I hope his dad is.
Yeah, maybe I don't want to know if Jake is genetically going as crazy as Gary, you know?
Yeah, not yet anyway. He needs a motorcycle accident and a few other things to make that happen. Let's see. The Star Trek connections. Juliana McCarthy, the old lady, Bradley. She was on Deep Space Nine. She played Mila, a Narraban Tane's housekeeper. That's a terrible name. In the episodes,
Now I remember her.
She was in Improbable Cause and The Dogs of War, and also an episode called What You Leave Behind. And then Jeffrey Combs, of course, who played Milton Dammers. He was 9 different characters, including Brunt and Wayund on DS9, as well as the Andorian Shran on Enterprise, which was an awesome role. That's the best thing about Enterprise, is his role. He was really good in there.
Roddenberry apparently had something on him. You know, like he had some dirt.
Absolutely.
Must have. Soundtrack grade, we give it a VE for Very Elfman. Mm-hmm. Pretty much as Danny Elfman as you get. Do we have a favorite Danny Elfman theme, by the way? Does anyone have
I do.
What? Oh, like film theme?
Yeah, film.
I do.
What?
Big Fish.
Big Fish is good.
It's because he does something that is so Danny Elfman, so similar to everything else, but it's distinguished. It stands alone. I always make fun of Desperate Housewives, because the whole thing is this Danny Elfman creeping along sound, like it's like that. You can't watch Desperate Housewives and not pick up on that. Man, Big Fish has a theme, and it's beautiful and soaring, and it breaks your heart.
Yeah, that's an awesome movie that is. It is underrated, underseen,
underappreciated.
People should really watch it. If I had to pick one. It's going to seem a little odd, but the remake of Charlotte's Web in 2006, the movie wasn't awesome,
I loved his
music in that. It was really, really good. So if you haven't seen that, you should.
I'm trying to think of which soundtracks I bought. I mean, I got the Batman's score soundtrack. That was pretty good. I think Beetlejuice.
Oh, wow.
For me.
That was probably one of the biggest, so huge.
Yeah.
Back then, yeah, I agree with you.
I did not know he did the first Mission Impossible theme. I had no idea. The first film score. That's crazy.
Right.
Not the theme, but the score of that film. That's crazy.
There's some movies in his list I had no idea. Spider-Man 3, Silver Linings Playbook.
He did all the Spider-Mans.
Spider-Man's the 2003 Hulk, but not the
everyone thinks of him as working almost solely with Tim Burton. They forget that he does a ton of stuff with Oz the Great and Powerful. What's his name? Sam Raimi. He does all kinds of Sam Raimi movies. He's whatever, man. Give a credit where credit is due. And if you're talking about musical stuff, though. I still think Nightmare Before Christmas is amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing bunch of composition in that thing, and singing for that matter.
Most probably the biggest, most impacting of all of them. I mean, I had that soundtrack and I'm like crazy.
It's really good.
Well, it's also one of the few that have lyrics.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Because all the other stuff is just score without lyrics.
And one of my favorite covers you ever played is that Marilyn Manson version of This Is Halloween.
Oh,
it's so good.
Yeah. There were some covers in this movie at the end, right?
Were there?
Yeah, there was one. There was the Mutton Busters, the Mutton Birds. Don't Fear the Reaper.
Mutton Birds. Mutton Busters.
I realized something on the end of this film. Don't Fear the Reaper is a really, really easy song to cover. And if you do it straight up, it kind of stinks. Like, I'm listening to this going... Why didn't they do anything with it's already a crappy song to start with. Why not mess with it? What are you doing?
It would have been fun for them to not try to. I don't like it when they try to fake like it is the real thing. Oh, there you go.
Every junior high garage band in the English-speaking world can do that song. It's just straight easy.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why?
Also a nice reminder that Ibbot can now play music through his mixer.
Oh, I thought Scott was doing
no,
that.
No, that was not me.
No, I now finally have it hooked up so I can do it.
That's when I control the
much
music.
To Scott's dismay.
No, it just usually catches me such off guard. I love it. Let's get
to... Before we go on, there's one movie that Danny Elfman scored that... always comes to mind as kind of out there, and the reason it's out there is because I'm talking about Black Beauty, the 94 remake of the horse movie.
Yeah. I don't watch horse movies.
Well, you don't watch horse movies, and I don't really watch horse movies, but I grew up with a mom who thinks that horse movies are the best movies ever made. And this movie came out in the summer after my freshman year at college. And I hadn't spent any time with my mom, and I took my mom to see the remake of Black Beauty, and she was so moved.
It wasn't what
so,
I thought it was. No,
no, no. Okay. But she was just so happy. Like, this is such a good movie, and it was right. Like it stuck in my brain. The score from that film.
That's a nice. That's I think how these things should be remembered. I'll tell you my kind of. I like horse movies. They're called westerns. All right.
I'm talking about movies that are specifically.
I know like Black Beauty and
a horse.
Yeah, Secretariat and freaking.
Because I've been around horses in real life, and I get it. People who love horses, and they are passionate about it. Bless you, God bless you. Yeah. Horses are mean.
Oh, and
I know people will say horses aren't mean. People who own horses are mean. I've seen horses kick each other in the ribs.
Yeah, they tell you never walk behind a horse, no matter
you have to have. Seriously, you have to have respect for horses. I don't hate horses.
I mean, if you're going to make a case that horses are mean, I'm going to start talking about how human beings are mean.
Yeah, horses are mean.
I'm curious. Anybody have a favorite
this week's
horse
Toy
movie?
Story 3.
A favorite right. horse movie?
Of all time. Favorite all-time horse movie.
Sex in the City 1.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm glad you did it. I'm going to say, I do have a favorite. Remember Shenandoah? Remember that business? Is it Shenandoah? Let me make sure I'm saying the right name.
Shenandoah.
Hold on. I got to find this because I don't remember the name exactly. Growing up. Yeah, is it Shannon? No, wrong one. Damn it. That's an old Western that's not nothing to do with what I'm talking
I'm gonna
about.
I'm going to go with Racing Stripes.
War Horse is mine. Just a few years
really?
Ago.
Really?
Yeah. I still haven't seen that. Is it good?
It's excellent. Mm. Yeah, it's
good.
It is so good. Well deserving of being nominated for an Oscar. Didn't really deserve to win, and it didn't. But
here are the 10 best horse movies of all time according to this thing. 2000's Running Free. Wow, could this site be slower? Next up, Seabiscuit.
I'm seeing okay. Lady Hawk in the top 10.
Dreamer. Oh, Dreamer was pretty good.
Yeah.
But that was mostly because What's-His-Name was really good, and also one of the Young Dakotas was really good.
Hold on. What's-His-Name is Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah, Kurt Russell. Hidalgo is on here.
That should be on there.
Really? You think so? I haven't seen that yet. I did want to see it.
I liked it.
I love me some Viggo Mortensen. That's a crap film.
I liked it. It was all right.
Interesting.
Horse Whisperer. Yeah, all right.
I never watched that. Okay. I'm...
Secretariat, and then they got on here your Black Beauty in 94. That's the one they like. National Velvet in 1945.
Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah. And then War Horse, number two. And then number one, The Black Stallion. I think that's just almost too easy. But there's these series of movies that were so big when I was a kid.
They come out all the time. There's Flicka. That was actually fairly popular amongst the people.
That's a seal or something.
Dolphin.
Isn't that a dolphin?
No. Oh, no, this is Flicka. This is the one with Tim McGraw. It wasn't that one. Oh, my God. Flicka.
As opposed to
Flipper.
Yeah, Flipper.
As opposed to Flipper.
We really like Flipper. All right, let's get to our Twitter post. In 140 horses or less, please sum this film up. Randy Jordan.
The Frighteners. Like a Stephen King book, only without the hokum. Uh-huh. I mean, no, wait. A different kind of hokum. Wait. Peter Jackson Hokum, so you know it's good.
Dwight Hokum.
I'm doing Hokum right now.
Nice job. Mr. Dunaway.
The Frighteners. Somewhere between Ghostbusters and Doc Hollywood, you will find a creepy necrophilia scene just like Doc Hollywood, my shooting text.
Wow. That scene is still killing my brain. I got to get rid of it again. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
The Frighteners, more like the Boringers with too much slapstickiners.
Ooh, pot stickers sound good though, right? Don't they? I must be hungry. All right, well, here's what I learned while you made the only ghost movie I really ever enjoyed much. Nothing stops the Grim Reaper like an unending supply of ghost bullets. Right. Number two, they took a real risk on Jackson for Lord of the Rings. That is definitely true. And it paid off. Nice job, guys. And then finally, Jake Busey looks great as the dripping booger face. And that's what I learned. We got an email from, Jack, who said, Mac from Florida, M-I-A-F-L, something anyway, whatever.
Miami, Florida.
Oh. Miami, Florida.
Oh, is M-I-A a short for Miami?
Yes.
But it's only two more letters. Just go ahead and write those out.
I think that's the airport code, too.
Are you sure he's not missing an action in Florida? Are you sure? I don't think. Maybe this is a cry for help.
Help me. I'm somewhere in Broward County.
Florida, help, oh dear Lord.
There's somebody making moonshine right over there.
I couldn't figure out how to get a message out, but I could figure out how to get an email to FilmSack.
About this thing you're about to hear. So Jackie Chan's Super Cop series is as follows. So there was some confusion on the show as to order. Number one, Police Story. Number two, second film, Police Story 2. Three, Super Cop. Four, Jackie Chan's First Strike. And five, the new Police Story, or new Police Story. The fifth film is not in continuity with the first four, but it is still badass, better than the First Strike, Jack. So there you go.
Jack. Huh.
A little bit of inside info from somebody who loves those movies. That is how that all went down. Ashley Lowe sent us an email. It says, Dear Film Sackers, I wanted to highly recommend your next movie for your viewing pleasure to be Screamers, starring Peter Weller.
Oh, yeah.
Officer Murphy.
I forgot about that.
Please drop your weapon.
All right. It's a awesome sci-fi movie about a man-made killing robot or robots that take over the mining planet Sirius 6B. And, of course, it has Officer Murphy in it. It's right up your alley. I almost read it's tight up your alley anyway. I remember seeing I remember seeing this movie as a kid at my friend's house for a sleepover, and it was a movie we weren't allowed to watch yet, so we stayed up late night, watched it, and became our secret sleepover movie. Love your commentary and keep up the good work, Ashley Lowe.
I'm down with that. So, is that on Netflix?
We're going to look and see if it is. If it is, great, let's get it on the list. But more importantly, I just wanted to quickly ask the three of us in this, one of our longest episodes ever made, the four of us. Right? Well, I meant the three of you.
Okay.
I never count myself. What is your secret little movie that you know your parents didn't want you to watch, but you and your friends figured it out and watched it anyway? Start with Dunham.
Oh, my God. We can't talk about porn on here. I mean,
Porn. Like actual movie with a theme and a you know, like a story and stuff.
Right. My mom had a copy of An Officer and a Gentleman. And, of course, not necessarily something I was supposed to watch because it had a lot of adult language in it. Yeah. And I wouldn't even say it was like my favorite movie, but I do remember watching it a couple of times.
It felt like the forbidden fruit.
It was. It was very forbidden fruit because I knew there was some, you know, some nude scenes in it and there was a lot of cussing and that kind of stuff. But it was all right.
Okay.
And I always felt guilty for watching that. I'm like, oh, mom would kill me if she knew I watched this.
Yeah. But there you were doing it anyway. Randy, you got a movie that's forbidden fruit for you?
We just talked about it a few weeks ago, The Revenge of the Ninja. I had a friend who had both HBO and a VCR and had recorded it like incognito, you know, snuck the tape in and recorded when mom and dad weren't looking. And then we would get up early on a Saturday morning after a sleepover and watch Revenge of the Ninja while they thought we were watching cartoons.
Wow. That's great. Ibbett, did you have one?
The closest, my grandparents rented Blade Runner for me when I was like 11 or 12. On a night that they were leaving, like said, okay, we'll swing by the video store, get you any movie you want. I'm like, how about Blade Runner? Like, ooh, there's boobs and there's a guy getting thumbs in his eyes. Probably that Rock and Roll High School by the Ramones or with the Ramones. Yeah. another one that they probably wouldn't have approved me seeing as young as I saw it. Yeah. And maybe even Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, Fast Times.
And I'm sorry for dragging this out, but you just said by the Ramones, and it made me think, you know, for me, it was a lot more about music I listened to that I wasn't supposed to be listening to. Was that the case for anybody else?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
A little bit of column A and column B for me, and TV. I was not allowed to watch Three's Company, as dumb as that sounds today.
Really?
Yeah, it was way too many innuendos. My mom couldn't handle it. She couldn't deal with it, so we never watched that. Or that would be the thing we'd sneak and try to watch when they'd have reruns or something. But for me, movie-wise, it was Revenge of the Nerds. It was really my forbidden fruit that nobody wanted me to watch, and I would know, you know, my friends and I would figure out a way to watch it.
Right. There's a lot of stuff on HBO that used to come on like late at night. I remember the first time I ever saw Impulse.
Yeah.
Not a very good movie, but interesting topic.
Impulse.
It's an earthquake, and after this earthquake, people start having the inability to stop any of their inhibitions. So they're like just doing crazy stuff. And it's got Tim Matheson, and it's got Bill Paxton in it.
1984. Meg Tilly. Yep,
Meg Tilly.
Huh.
And I remember watching this several times on HBO. My parents weren't in
it. Seems like something we ought to.
It sounds like a fun one.
Not available on Netflix.
First time I ever seen somebody do it doggy style.
Whoa!
What? Whoa! Wow!
It was implied.
It was implied. They didn't actually show anything or anything, but I knew that it was not something I was supposed to be watching.
Yeah, it's like your first tip is, what the hell is that?
Second time? Right here in the Frighteners.
What are they doing there? What are they doing? That's not how you do it. What are they doing?
I remember, one last memory. I remember being at my cousin's house, and he had HBO, and we didn't. Okay, so that was like, HBO itself was forbidden fruit. And I remember they had a screen on his same big giant, one of those giant satellites, right out that was outside before we got the little dishes, just this huge satellite dish. He had a scrambled Playboy channel.
Oh, yeah.
Totally scrambled, though. So what he did, he would sit in front of that TV for, I'm not kidding you guys, like 4.5 hours straight while his parents were gone. Right. And just stare at it, just looking for shapes and things and stuff that must be what he thought it was.
That's exactly what you did with that. It was like, it was all this warped, you know, twisted white noise. And it was like, oh, that's a boob. That's totally a boob.
Exactly. Totally. What the heck, man? What was going on in our heads?
If you hit that satellite off the satellite just a little bit, you would tilt it just a little bit.
Yeah, and you get a little bit of there. Oh my gosh, there was almost color there for a second. Mm-hmm. Like it was just what a waste of time.
Every once in a while you get in a black and white signal of the actual what was going on.
Yeah. I remember at one point going, we should really go outside and play baseball or something.
Right?
We should go do something with our lives. This is the biggest waste of time. But yeah, that's what you do. You're a boy. Your hormones are all out of whack, and you got a scrambled Playboy channel at your cousin's.
You got to see this.
That's it. Thank you for your emails, everybody. Really appreciate those. You can send more of those to us at filmsack@gmail.com. We are happy to read them, and will on the show if they're short. We like them short. Next movie is 2002's Rollerball. 2002's, not 1970 whatever's Rollerball. It's Rollerball the way it was meant to be watched, which is badly and poorly.
Dunaway and I are going to watch them both.
Yeah, you guys should.
I agree.
Are they both streaming?
Yeah, they're both streaming, mm-hmm. I think.
I don't care.
It might behoove you, listener, to watch both of these movies, because I think we're going to kind of watch both of them. The movie is the 2002 version, but we're probably going to be talking a lot about the 1975 version.
I don't know how behooved I'll be, but we'll see. we'll let you know. 2002's Rollerball coming out next week. In the meantime, visit us on the web, filmsack.com. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. And on Twitter, follow us, @filmsack. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yep.
See you next time.
You are violating my territorial bubble.
Gross.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!